because the school played hockey and I was quite good, so on we went to the club, which was playing at King George V playing fields. That was 1949, the grammar school.
Grammar school.
Then. We started to play as children there because we had a very good games mistress who turned up. There's an old name for you. Mary Coleman. She was the daughter of one of our early councillors. Lived in Broxwood Lane, at the top there, 72 Broxwood Lane. But Mary was very enthusiastic, very good, out of the Navy, very keen, and she got lots of girls interested, and we all moved on to the hockey club in 1948, 49, that sort of time, maybe even 47. So that's how I joined. But the club was very well formed by then. It was running at least two teams. But it originated because of Mr. Horn in 1921. In the old, well, in News, or the Pilot almost, he was the one who wanted to start a club. And that very first year, in 1921, he was advertising for players, and he ran 12 ladies, 8 men and 6 mixed, 1922, playing way before the war. So it was, and that was on Handside playing fields, which eventually stopped in the end of the season of 1938, because the ground was very treacherous, whoever wrote that, and 2 men got injured, were moved to George V, which was, it wasn't even called George V, it was just called Behind the Heat Beehive, and that, as from September 38, where it then stayed till all weather pitches started, and we moved away. There was another hockey club in the town as well, and that was Murphy Radio. Murphy Radio seemed to have done a lot of sport, so there was a sort of a rivalry there as well, I should imagine, between, you know, can we get the girls from Murphy Radio, or where do we get our players from? It was hilarious, really, because we had to paint our own balls. They were cricket balls, which were red. Right. Every week we had to paint our balls white. I'm doing that because I can see my husband with these balls sitting on nails, you know, to paint them each week.
Right.
And we had to carry out our own posts, and if we were lucky, there might be a man to help, you know, a men's hockey who might help you put them up, because they were quite high up here, you know.
Yes.
Difficulty, and they were quite heavy. But over the years, the pitch became incredibly good for grass hockey.
Right.
You know, it really was. It kept beautifully. I wish I could remember the name of the man who worked so hard down there, but we were very close to the groundsman, you know.
Yes.
He was interested in the game, and we were interested in having a good pitch. So he kept it properly mown and everything, and the lines, but the girls were responsible for painting the ball and putting up the posts, which was quite funny. Most of us didn't have television.
Right.
So they used to tell you when the match finished, you were either told by the captain that you were wanted next week, or you were waited a postcard through the post to see. And then if we were playing, the problem was getting to the away game. It's all right at home, you could get on your bike, or there are very few motor cars, so we used to have to find our own way to the away pitch, because none of the girls had a car, and this would probably be a train ride, or certainly a bus ride, and probably a mile walk at the other end, you know, to get to whatever pitch you were going to, St Albans or Broxbourne, or, but you know, you played around the Harpenden, of course, and places like that, but you had to find your own way there. And sometimes there was a story told that you know, they all dashed over the bridge at the railway station and said, there's one more, wait, hold the train back to get the pitching girl back. You know, she's coming. And then they'd go off towards Luton, or that was another, we used to go to Luton and Dunstable. Every match started at the same time, wherever you were playing. You all started at 2 or 2.30. Nobody played in the morning. And this was interesting because at least it gave you a real club spirit, because you all finished and you all came back, and you all, if you had shared pitches like the Welling Garden City Hockey Club did, there was men and ladies, 2 or 3 teams, you all piled into the clubhouse for tea at the end. So you got to know quite a cross-section of boys and girls, you know, a lot of them got married. But on the other hand, your whole Saturday afternoon, and probably up to about 6 o'clock, was devoted to the game, because you had to get home again.
Sure.
And you're tired by now, and some would go out on the tiles, but a lot wouldn't, you know.
KG5 then.
Well, there were a lot by the time we finished, because we had at least, by the time I finished, we had three teams and possibly occasionally four, and the men also had a large club. So they had the two side by side with the Hatfield High Cricket Club in the middle, which was sacrosanct, of course. And then outside there was a pitch there and a pitch there. The pitch, there's at least three more pitches outside where they all play football now. And that's, of course, they were all home pitches, so you've got your away teams playing somewhere else. So the club got really quite large,
having started
with one. And then, because you all used to have tees, I mean, like you used to in tennis clubs, you had tea. To start with, you used to take tea for yourself and tea for your opposition, so you carry. But then they got a much better scheme going. You did it, so and so did the tea for the whole team, so you had to do 22, you know, sandwiches on the Saturday morning. I can see the table in the kitchen, you know, being covered in paste or salmon sandwiches or, you know, whatever that was going. And then eventually we employed a very nice couple who came every week and did the teas of the men and the women. They did it till the club left in George V, really. The teas varied tremendously as the years went by. We used to have oranges at half time, which I don't believe they do now, because we had these great open sticks, and now they have little sticks that turn up at the end. They all have those, and they're flexible, which ours was solid. So what with a solid cricket ball and a solid hockey stick, you know, and a pitch that possibly was like that. The umpires are all voluntary, often from the team. You often had a member of the team doing the umpiring. We had to inspect the pitch every week. Somebody had to go down and make sure the pitch was ready to play. These oranges, all the match fees are about £1, which is very reasonable. It wasn't a very expensive game, not really. Mm. We changed, well, we didn't if we were a home game, but we had changing rooms where they're still there, those concrete things in the middle of the whole playing fields. But they were divided, you know, there was the men's hockey and the ladies' hockey, and on the other side was the football people and things like that. So we had a room, you know, to put our coats and things. The club got bigger, the club got a little bit more money, so we used to hire a minibus every week with a driver, which was great. As that kept you together as well as a team. We went down to Margate and Ramsgate. We used to have a very good, very big, very important to us, Easter festival. Ran for about 4 days, Good Friday, Saturday, Sunday and Monday, yes. And of course the takings over the bar by now, that was very important. Mm. And we were given, at a peppercorn rent, the pavilion that's still there, just behind the beehive. Whitbread donated this pavilion, and in there we had a bar and changing rooms for men and women. And each Easter we used to run a festival, which was at the end of the season, really, almost the end of the season. So we used to have teams from all over, sometimes abroad, sometimes a team might come over from Holland or something like that, and then make a regular visit. And all the catering would be done by the girls, and the bar was run profitably by relays of people behind the bar. And of course often the weather was bad, but one year I can remember all my family, myself, my husband and the three boys were all playing on the same festival. So they used to go away for festivals away, and this big one we had ourselves at Easter time. Towards the end of my playing career, we used to entertain the men in this clubhouse to a dinner and a cabaret. Then they then did the same, and they gave us dinner and had a very, very good cabaret. But it was a very sociable way of enjoying life. Burning Garden City Hockey Club, which we amalgamated into court. Originally it was two separate clubs, really separate, but then there came a period, and I've forgotten again what time it was, when they felt it would be better to link it up, share the expenses, but we were very efficient. I will add, the girls were very efficient, and I'm not sure whether it necessarily was the best answer, but it's what was chosen by the committee of the time to link up, you know. Yes, they used to go to Holland as a sort of, it was the club that they came to us at Easter, and we would send a team out there. We once entertained an Argentinian team. That was very important. We gave them a lovely spread and we beat them. We were thrilled to bits. They were coming round, I think, they were coming round playing different clubs in England, and I think probably maybe we were riding high. We used to put a lot of girls into the county. Mm. You know, they went forward. I mean, it was a strong club. Some who went further to the east, the region, as the eastern region as it was then. One of the girls, one of the youngsters, went through to England B, I think. Mm-hmm. She was Jill Clark. Her mother was a long-standing captain of our club. I can remember writing a letter to the Hockey News, which was the ladies' hockey magazine, saying, why do you have county matches on a Saturday? We lose at least seven of our players to the county team, and then we're not a very strong team anymore because we've just lost our county players. Why can't we play on a Sunday? Your county game's on a Sunday. And I got this letter back, which I kept for years, which said, on a Sunday, women are looking after their husbands and cooking the Sunday lunch. I think we hockey always players. Were expecting the boys and girls to come from the school, right. We were there ready for them, as it were. At the beginning we didn't have a junior section, but later on we had an under 18 team. Certainly we were getting two or three regularly coming in from the grammar school. Yes, we got one or two girls from outside altogether. I mean, a girl came in from Stevenage regularly and she was only about 14 or 15, but it was the club to come to.
Yes.
And she used to come down and somebody used to pick her up by car from the station, so by now cars have turned up. Word of mouth, or girls and boys coming in from outside for work in Welling Garden, because we had plenty of work, didn't we? A lot of ICI people, George.
Oh, yes, yes,
a
indeed.
A lot of ICI, because they came in with the ability and, you know, they learnt their sport somewhere else, but they were in on our club as well. And at the time, the girls who came from the grammar school in the early days said we always won because we were brought up on the most appalling pitch down there. We never, ever, ever got mown or, you know, rolled or whatever. So we were used to balls bouncing all over the place. So it was a good experience before you went out and met